Hello, Jean.
Hi, Becky. It's good to be together again.
Yes, welcome back. We are talking this season about an invitation to faithfulness and seeing that in God, and then how might that reflect in us and how we parent our kids. Today's topic is difficult kids and behaviors. But as we get started with that today, Jean, I was thinking of how, even as adults, I know myself and friends, we often identify ourselves with being a rule follower or a rule breaker. And sometimes we use that. And we'll, some people are like, oh, I'd rather ask forgiveness than ask permission. And
Right.
just how that tends to be a tendency we all have, one or the other. Where do you fall in that?
Oh, I am definitely a rule follower. I don't, it's not like I'm necessarily proud of it, but if there's a rule, I will follow it. If papers are handed out and the teacher or the person says, don't turn them over, I don't turn it over. How about
To
you?
the I will be a rule follower, except I might turn that paper over. I found in certain circumstances, I tend to have like certain situations I put in that I will be a rule breaker, which is funny too. But it's interesting to me that you said I'm not proud of that,
Yeah.
which is a great introduction because I think, they both have their strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly.
Yeah, so as we go into this idea and concept of challenging behavior or kids that tend to be more challenging, I think that's just so important to note right off the hand that it's not good or bad if you're a rule follower or breaker, but it's how that can be a strength or weakness and recognizing that.
Right. That's what I kind of meant by that tongue-in-cheek comment that I'm not proud of it, meaning I don't think that's better than a rule challenger. It's just different.
So let's talk a little bit about that, just the whole how we're going to talk about our conversation today. What's the difference between challenging kids and what we might call challenging behaviors that all kids have?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Because let me back up just a second before I answer that. And I don't maybe know the definitive answer, but I'll give my opinion. We know as adults pretty much what we mean by those words. We know what we mean is, oh gosh, my child is very strong-willed or my child is very challenging. But our kids don't know what those words intrinsically mean. And so, even by our trying to describe our children, we are kind of forming their identity for them. And I think that might not be very fair to them. Because honestly, I believe that there are fewer challenging children, and more often it's challenging behavior that all children show. If there are, in fact, challenging children, I think that sometimes those cases are when a child has maybe suffered some kind of abuse or neglect or upheaval in their home, or maybe even a serious disease. Something kind of almost catastrophic in their life has caused them maybe to view life as unsafe. And they have become a challenging person, as opposed to a child who just refuses to go to bed when you tell them to, or never picks up after themselves, or doesn't listen the first 12 times you say something to them. All of those I would characterize more as challenging behaviors.
Yes. No, that's good. And I think saying from the outset, it's important to identify too with children with an actual diagnosis like ADHD or such, that
Correct.
is unique beyond what we're talking about or to be taken into consideration.
Oh, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. There are real important diagnoses. As a, you know, my background is in special education, so I'm well aware of how those brain developmental things impact a child's behavior. Yeah.
Right. Which I think, just as a sneak peek, next session, we're going to talk a little bit more about those unique needs that children. Okay. So for today's conversation, we're looking at challenging behavior that we're establishing. Kind of our premise is that's what all children, we're going to face that with all children. It just might look different on if their temperaments, their traits, their challenging behaviors look different.
Oh, completely so. I'll just give a real quick example of two of my children, both boys, were equally challenging, but one seemed, he was such an introverted child. He was so quiet and content to just do his own thing. He didn't draw a lot of attention to himself. And so to the casual observer, they might think, oh, he's a compliant child. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time he was, but he was probably the most stubborn of all my children. I mean, he would dig his heels in and would not easily change his mind and come around to doing what I wanted him to do. Whereas my other child was very outgoing and very loud and very seeming defiant. But he wasn't. He was just loud and kind of aggressive, but he was just not nearly as stubborn as my quieter child, and actually came around to doing the things I wanted him to do more quickly. And it was a little bit easier to get him to do the things I wanted him to do. I just had to learn how to handle each one of them. But my quiet, stubborn child was the one that just took longer to get him to comply.
Yeah. Yes. And I think you make a note how we respond in general as a parent. There's this, when it's outward and demonstrative and loud, is a different type of challenge than maybe, like you say, that slow burn. It may not be outward at all, but can even be more difficult when it's not coming out.
Right, because it surprises you, or you think, I'm so tired out by this blatant, loud disobedience or defiance, whatever you want to call it, that I'm going to deal with this other thing later because it doesn't seem quite as pressing.
It's noisy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and all that is just to say, all of our children have challenging behaviors. You might just not be able to see them quite as overtly.
Yeah. So I want to bring up right away, just because I think I've heard it so much. So I'm guessing others have heard this, like, good behavior equals a good kid, bad behavior equals a bad kid. How do we avoid connecting their performance or their behavior to their identity?
That is such an important and good question, but I think we need to go back to kind of the bigger thing about how God loves and leads us, because I hear adults all the time, especially women, who are having a piece of chocolate cake for dessert, and they will say, I'm bad, or I'm being bad. And I thought, no, you're not. You're having a piece of cake. So it's something that's kind of ingrained, especially in women, to judge ourselves as good or bad. Maybe yours isn't eating sweets. Maybe it's buying an article of clothing you don't need. But whatever it is, I hear women say, I'm bad, or I'm being bad. And so before we can get to helping our kids understand, or helping us understand our children aren't good or bad based on behavior, we have to think about that in and of ourselves. Like, does God view me as bad because I binged some TV show for 2 hours instead of reading my Bible?
Right.
And of course, Of course, he's not mad at us about that.
Yes.
He's
Thank
maybe unhappy with a less healthy choice.
you.
But we need to view ourselves that way and kind of come to grips with how we're talking about ourselves before we can even address it with our kids.
Good. Thank you for bringing us back to there, because then it springs from who we are and from who our lives are, and not our own performance track of being a good parent or a bad parent, right?
Exactly.
So, how does God see us, Jean, then, when, like, how do we handle those moments when we think we're falling short? Is that an invitation? I guess when you say that, then I'm like probably pausing and just seeing, okay, God, did I really blow it with that choice? Or what's, you
Which
know,
is a
what is
fine,
going on?
right? Which is a fine question to ask. Most of the time, we're not even aware of it. It's such a
Exactly.
subconscious
Right.
worldview of good, bad, only based in behavior. And God doesn't view us that way at all. So I think a good thing to get our minds straight around this is just to maybe meditate, think about, consider, answer the invitation to how God feels about us. He is so for us. He just loves us. And when we fall, he's sad for us, not sad about us. Such an important thing. And I've actually had to use that sentence with one of my children who has just had a very, very difficult time. He is one of those ones that I was mentioning who just had such a chaotic childhood. And after we adopted him when he was four, and he had already just suffered horrible abuse at the hands of foster parents. And so he's had a hard time growing up and a hard time making good choices and has struggled with drug addiction and homelessness and just things that you never want to be true for your children. So I have had to say to him often, I am not disappointed in you. I'm disappointed for you. And I think that needs to be our heart posture toward our children, no matter what age they are. Toddlers,
Well, and I love this, because I feel like what you're bringing us, we talk about, it's an invitation to faithfulness, which at the for me at the foundation then is just understanding God's faithful to us. That's what we're building on. Not our own behavior that's going to sometimes be right and be right on, sometimes won't. Our kids' behavior that's sometimes going to be all right, won't be on. But this is like God's faithful, like day in and day out. And his love never ceases and never runs out for us. That's the invitation we hold underneath all of it.
I really, and so that's the big picture, and we can philosophize about the big picture. I love to do that, but I also want to give our listeners some real practical help with challenging behaviors. I'm gonna kind of jump into some of those, and I think the biggest, most important thing, and if you'll probably remember that we've talked about this in past episodes, but we need to understand the root cause of the behavior. Why is my child acting this way? Is it because they're frustrated or hungry or overwhelmed, or they are met with something unexpected and they're very structured and they can't handle surprises? Are they just not able to get your attention? They feel in a more positive way. And so they're just trying to get some kind of reaction from you. And the sad truth is, bad behavior tends to get more attention more quickly than good behavior does. And so we need to look at what the child is doing. We don't have to react first, unless, of course, they're running out in the middle of the street. We really can take a minute to ask ourselves, what is going on here? And to take a deep breath, do the oh God, oh God, oh God, help me prayer. And as much as possible, stay calm. Don't give them the power in that situation. We can try to not overreact. And most of the time, I think we're the ones in a hurry. And so we tend to overreact. We tend to think, I don't have time for this, or this is going to be too embarrassing, or it's going to be a tantrum, and I've got other things to do. I think that's where the problem lies. If we can stay calm, if we can try not to overreact, if we can try to figure out what's going on. And I know that sounds easier to do, sounds easier than it is actually to do it. And I can tell you, I can't count the number of times I did not do that. And the results were something worse, I believe. It, when I react out of my embarrassment or my impatience, things go worse, especially with my stubborn child that I mentioned. He was digging his heels, and if I say hurry, he is not going to hurry.
Sure, got the opposite, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, I don't mean to beat a drum, but I feel like it maybe I do want to beat this drum. You've often talked about preparation.
Right.
And so even that step before, I was just talking to a parent this week that knew she had several trips kind of back to back and family activities. And I just noted, you know, that's something you can even prepare your kids for, that they would know going in that, you know, this is going to be a really busy 2 to 3 weeks. And mom's, you know, going to be gone more. And I want you to know, like, you know, you could build in ways to connect, or, you know, Thanksgiving's going to come after that. And then that's when we're going to have all those days together. I think, again, a little bit of those times where we can prepare. Because then you can revisit it. Because sometimes, like you said, there's the expected, but there's the unexpected, which we'll talk about next. But if we know certain situations or environments are going to be more challenging, the preparation will give you language for when you know your child's struggling, then that it's like, okay, remember, and you've set up some type of agreement or understanding that you can revisit when that difficult behavior surfaces.
Right. Because so much of dealing with difficult behaviors really does have to do with expectations that you have for your children, expectations you have for yourself, and communicating those expectations.
Yes.
It's very important, using the example you just did about knowing so many things are coming up, having that conversation first and having it maybe numerous times, you know, come back to it and say, like when your child's getting up in the morning, remember I told you that we had a number of things to do today? How does that make you feel? We have to make sure that our children, they don't have all the power like they think they want when they throw those temper tantrums, but they do have some power, and that is the power that we give them to express themselves. It's so important that we teach kids to talk about how they're feeling. So having those conversations, making sure your child feels heard, making sure they're getting appropriate attention so they're not trying to get it through negative things. And let's say you do all of those things and everything still goes badly. You end up tearing out your hair and it's just bad. One of the things that's very important is to, even when your child's behavior is difficult, try to find something positive. You know, maybe they threw a tantrum and they ended up, oh, kicking and screaming and yelling, but they didn't throw anything and they could have. It's important to be able to say, I know you were very upset and I'm sorry about that, but I sure love the way you did not call your brother names. Or I'm so proud the way you got control within 5 minutes. I mean, we can too often the positive things get lost.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's so important to be able to find that good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we can even give them a hug or give them a smile
mm-hmm.
or a, you know, whatever it is your family does to show appreciation, that will kind of set a memory marker in their hearts and in their minds of, oh, my mom still loves me. Even when I lose control, or my dad is still proud of me. He's not like disgusted by my inability to control myself because they said something nice, or they still hugged me and told me what they appreciate about me.
Yeah, which, I mean, just the reminder here that we're growing their self-control. Like they aren't born with self-control.
No.
And so that's what parenting, like that's what we're parenting, right? And you're acknowledging in your example, like you controlled this part of you. Like,
yeah.
So it shows them, and maybe yourself, which needs the big reminder too, they're growing in their self-control. And that's really a lot of the goal. And I think of like trade-offs is what I would say too. Like when you know maybe your child is like going into a service or a concert or somewhere where they're gonna have to sit that for a time that's just really hard for their age bracket.
Sure.
I think if we know the sacrifice they're making or the, all the energy that's going to take for them to be self-controlled and yourself, but maybe like letting them know, okay, like after you sit this long, or, you know, you can bring this with you, or afterwards you can do this. Like if we acknowledge that's hard, you know, and mom knows it. So afterwards we're going to do this, or I'm going to let you bring this in. Like, is that helpful?
Oh, I think it's incredibly helpful. I remember the days of homeschooling, and one of my boys was just so negative about math. He was, I can't do this. I won't do this. I don't want to do this. And I knew that he could. I knew that he was very bright, but he had talked himself into this negative space.
Right.
And so it had to be, I think you can do it. You think you can't. Let's see who's right. Do two of them, and then you get to have 5 minutes of whatever. Go run around the house, or, you know, play a game of checkers or some kind of thing. When we recognize the thing that our child is struggling with and make it worth their while. I mean, as adults, we get paid for doing our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get people thank us for doing something above and beyond. We're not, it's not a function of age to not need those things anymore. For us to give our children positive reasons to do things is a very valuable lesson, because that's how we as adults work too.
Right. Absolutely. And just even that example here, two problems,
right.
You know, you didn't say 10 or one page, like you broke it. I guess where you see the greatest resistance or challenge, like that's probably the spot you need to like really make a baby step.
Exactly. Exactly. Just because he should have been able to do all 15 problems without a problem, he had convinced himself that he couldn't.
Right.
So we needed to make it possible for him. So even with teenagers, you know, we so badly want them to learn some kind of basic hygiene. You know, we want you to brush your teeth numerous times, you know, at least twice a day. Well, if they're like coming off a month of never brushing their teeth, you're not going to start with, you have to do this after every meal. You're going to start with, before you go to bed, would you please brush your teeth? That's all I'm asking, just before you go to bed. And then you say, gosh, thank you so much. I am so proud of you for remembering to do that. You agreed to do it. Then you followed through on it. That's amazing. Instead of getting mad at them for not being able to do it, everything has to be baby steps when we're meeting them where there's a place of resistance.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. And making our, I agree. I feel I know in myself, my expectations were often greater because I've known, I know this and I've told them 100 times, but that does not mean they've grasped it or at, like you said, I mean, we all have those areas that we get stuck in as adults. So if we can empathize with our kids, may just have areas that they or get stuck in, and they need a smaller step and they need to be met there in that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we forget that our kids are really just human beings in training at every stage. None of us would start a brand new job and do it, know exactly what to do without any training. Mm-hmm. Every job we have takes training and takes learning for different aspects of it. And so that's what happens with kids. And I, sadly, because so many of us as parents, and I include myself in this, we didn't learn everything that we needed to learn when we were children. So we're still learning so much now, but we forget that our kids don't know everything that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you're parenting teenagers, they think they do.
Oh, yeah, that's another. I want to talk here about like when we talked about when they dig their heels in, whether that's the really demonstrative one or whether that's your quiet one that just is like they're just resisting.
Yeah.
What you've told, what do you do, Jean?
First of all, what I wish I would have done during those years was to stay calm. Even with both sides, whether they're the ones having the tantrum or they're the ones just stubbornly saying, I'm not going to do it, both of those extremes can make us feel helpless and angry, and we just are going to make them do what we want them to do. And so the very first thing that needs to happen is for us to be centered in who we are, to stay calm enough to think, is this a realistic thing I'm asking them to do?
Okay.
Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. Mm-hmm. When it is, then you just need to calmly, and it might take way longer than you want, but we have to be consistent. If I've told my son to put his shoes on and he keeps throwing them at me, I have to consistently take them back and say, put these on. Or I need to say, we can't leave, can't go to the park, can't do whatever we're doing until your shoes are on. And I'm going to sit downstairs and wait for you to get your shoes on. I can't do that. Couldn't do that with my stubborn one because he was content to just be in his room and read for days on end. So it had to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I really need you to do this. This is not asking too much. So you're going to do this for every few minutes. I have to come back in or whatever and check to see if you've done it or not. You are going to lose whatever they want, whatever is the most. Whatever. If I have to wait 5 minutes, you're losing 5 minutes of computer time. If I have to wait 10 minutes, you're losing 10 minutes of gaming. Whatever it is their thing is, that's what the natural consequences has to be.
Right.
And so then it stops being a struggle of wills. And it's just matter-of-factly, this is how it is. And this is a decision you're making.
Right. And that's the thing I think, right. It so easily becomes that power, like, you know, trying to one up each other.
Right.
So somehow we can't engage in that, even though that's what they're engaging in at that moment.
Right. Somebody has to be the adult.
Yes. Oh man. Yep.
Yeah. And if you're not able to be the adult in that situation, then give yourself a timeout.
Sure.
So I'm not leaving this situation because you get to have your way. I'm leaving so I don't lose my temper.
Right.
And I'll come back in and visit it with you.
Right. Which I've done. And sometimes that is, like you said, if you're in that heat of the moment or reaction and you know, that's valid. I think that I like what you say. Be calm. Don't feel like you have to be hurried. Because sometimes that moment we just need, and it's okay.
If we right.
Don't, yeah. Respond in that second. Like,
don't, and we can, yeah, we can always come back to it. We can say, hey, I really blew that. Remember, yep. I'm talking about how important open communication is. And if our children can hear us say, I was wrong, they're going to learn how to say I was wrong as well. That's not a failure. That's a win right there.
Yes. That's good. That's good. Okay, Jean, what's the takeaway? Like, if you could give each parent like something to take away today, what do you want to offer?
Oh, I don't just have one, but I will say, okay, I'll say this one. None of us have bad kids. Mm. If that's kind of what you're thinking in your mind, my kid is just bad, or this is bad. That's not ever accurate. Your child is made in the image of God. And so we need to change our view of them. If a child has very difficult behaviors, it just means you need to help them a little bit more.
Yeah. Yep. And meet them where they are.
Yeah. And get help. Listen to this podcast. Get some good books. Ask for recommendations of good things. Find a parenting expert to help you if you're having trouble with that. But your kid is not bad. Might be challenging, but not bad.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you,
thank
Becky.
You, so everyone, nice to be with you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be back in a couple of weeks.
All right. Bye.